A Taste of Gold and Iron by Alexandra Rowland, read by Casey Jones.
Chapter 1. Halfway through his 25th year, and to his acute relief, Prince Kado became an uncle. Despite Kado spending the entirety of his sister's pregnancy in terror and worry, the whole affair ended up being quite as routine as such things could be, but for the fact that the niece in question pushed him one joyous rung further down the line of succession. The night of Zeliha's labors, Kado prayed fervently in the temple for hours until finally the good news arrived with the sudden crack of fireworks above, the shower of colored splendor, and Kado felt like he could breathe easy for the first time in months. Years, maybe. It was the lamp of the lighthouse above him at last, after a long, stormy night at sea. Of course, peace and relief were a luxury that not even princes could easily afford for more than a moment or two. Princess Aina's birth was followed by days of celebration. For the court, for the people of the capital and the rest of the kingdom, for the hundreds of Kahyalar who served throughout the palace and the government with loyalty and devotion. With his sister, the Sultan, indisposed, and gleefully taking advantage of her own opportunity for some peace, the duties of representing House Mahisti to the populace naturally fell to Kado, as did a greater than usual proportion of the daily concerns of the realm, a very alarming break-in at the Shipbuilders Guild on the night of the birth itself. A wealthy merchant from Oisos caught committing one of the most blasphemous crimes Kado could conceive of several days later. A number of perplexing tantrums thrown by Cyrenos, the body father of the new princess, which Kado's already shaky nerves found as upsetting and alarming on a personal level as the former two catastrophes were on a larger scale. All these added up to a solid whirlwind week, during which time Kado barely had a chance to breathe, let alone hold his new niece for more than a minute or two the morning after she was born. But waters rising to the peak of a hectic king tide meant only that they would inevitably fall back to a time of dull, lax tides. It seemed Her Majesty decidedly agreed, and moreover, felt that it was up to her to hurry things along.
"You look thin," Zeliha had told him, not 2 days before, in a very bossy, big sister sort of voice, when they'd finally found a moment to speak beyond Kado's hectic official reports. Zeliha had waved off any further need for rest and recovery from childbirth when she'd heard what the Oisic merchant had been arrested for, declaring that she would attend to that matter herself so that Kado could give his full attention to the Shipbuilders Guild. They had heard that a Satyota from Inacha was visiting the city, a truth witch, as they were called in the slangy street dialect, and had hired him to question Azuta Melakrinos to Thoriko about where, precisely, she had received the huge amount of counterfeits with which she'd attempted to pay a gambling debt. The interrogation hadn't gone well. Azuta was too clever to answer a question straight when she could reply with a rhetorical question or a half-truth instead. But when Azuta had been dragged off back to her cell, Zeliha and Kado had had a brief moment alone, free of anyone who they had to play-act formality for.
"You look like a wrung-out dishcloth. Are you eating? Are you sleeping?"
He hadn't been, particularly, on either count. He'd been too worried about the progress that wasn't being made on the investigation at the Shipbuilders Guild, about Cyrenos arrogantly inserting himself into conversations he didn't belong in and passionately declaring that Azuta Melakrinos, his fellow countrywoman, deserved a fair trial and representation in court. Too worried about having confided some of these worries to the wrong people. No, of course he hadn't been sleeping, nor eating more than scratches here and there. But before he'd been able to answer her, Zeliha had declared that it was high time they all got out of the palace for a day and thought about literally anything besides kingdom running. A hunt, she said, would be just the thing. It was said that in ancient times, when the great conqueror Asan Bugha had come to this coast and declared that here was where she would build the capital of her new kingdom, it had been one of her sorcerers who had raised the great plateau where the palace now stood. The rest of the land around was mostly flat forest or open farmland.